Hi, I'm Susan Lewis. I had the chance to talk to composer Robert Cohen about his work on a variety of subjects. I asked him if he thought music could communicate about important issues in a way that enables people to hear, when sometimes words cannot.
I think it can. I mean, I have one piece which is, and it's my most performed piece, and it's I'm absolutely astounded at the reaction I get. It's a piece called Alzheimer's Stories. It just received its 22nd performance a couple of weeks ago. It's receiving its 23rd this Sunday. It was written on a commission from a gentleman whose parents had both passed from Alzheimer's disease and wanted a way to remember them. And my initial reaction is, this is an impossible project. What could you do? And yet, as it turned out, as we researched, we found that music is actually the last thing that Alzheimer's patients lose. You cannot know where you are, who your children are. You can be unable to speak English. And yet, if you play a song for somebody, they'll be able to sing it back to you exactly as they heard it. Because somewhere inside, at the most basic level, is music. And this has provided incredible help to caregivers because it's a way of reaching people that seem unreachable. And so when I did that, and that was really the first piece that I did that really brought to me the idea of the power of music to communicate and to actually move people in their lives, it became important for me to express things that I thought personally and my lyricists and librettists thought were important to them through music, rather than it just being, you know, another setting of a mass, for example. I have no desire to do a setting of O Magnum Mysterium. There's some wonderful settings out there. But to me, that doesn't express anything that means something to me personally. So I think whatever we write, we try to do something that will go beyond just the music, but go to the idea, the literary idea or the philosophical idea, and try to communicate something to somebody in the hope that whatever ideas we have, if they're of any value, will be able to be picked up, whether it's consciously or at a subconscious level.
What drew you to the Alzheimer's piece?
Nothing. It was purely coincidental. It was the commission. It would have been the last thing that I would ever have thought of doing. In fact, when I first approached the librettist, actually a very well-known guy, Herschel Garfine, he did the libretto for the Grammy Award-winning Elmer Gantry. I was introduced to him actually by the composer who wrote Elmer Gantry. His first words were, "Run away." He said, "He says I can't possibly." He had no knowledge of Alzheimer's. I unfortunately had gone through it with my stepmother, but he said, "There's no way I can give this any justice. I know nothing about it. Anything I write would not ever be able to come up to the level that this disease engenders in people, emotionally, in other ways, and physically." And so I had almost stay at him for a while, because at first I said, well, you know, this is kind of, who's ever going to do this piece beyond the commissioning group? Because that often happens, as you know, with pieces of contemporary music. They get their one performance by the commissioning group, and then, you know, you never hear from it again. But I stayed with it, and he stayed with it, and then he came up with the brilliant idea of creating a blog for the chorus, in which choral members and their family and friends would leave stories about friends and family with Alzheimer's. And of those stories, we took a whole number, and those became the basis for this piece. And then he also intertwined it with accounts from actually Dr. Alzheimer's initial interviews with his first patient, which are actually available. And so the piece gained a form. And then the last section was called For the Caregivers, and that's where the whole idea of music being the last thing to go came in. And since we wrote it, which is 2000, it was first performed in 2009, as I said, it's had 22 performances throughout the U.S. and in Vienna. I feel very strongly that it's the piece for which I want to be remembered, because it moves people in a way that gives me a sense that I've accomplished something.
What was the instrumentation for that?
It's actually for, I call it a large ensemble, it's actually for two soloists, chorus, and 14 instruments.
Is it available to be listened to?
Sure. Published by Peters. The best performance is on my website. I was just recently done by, actually, Montclair State University has one of the best choirs. They always sing with the New Jersey Symphony, and they did a tremendous performance. I've never had a piece of music where people come up to me and they actually say that I've changed their lives. And that's, it's at first I was almost taken aback because I always, having spent so much time in musical theater, it was always, you know, there were ideas, but it was always about entertainment. It was always lightness to it. And this had a very personal meaning to me because I had gone through it with my stepmother.
Did they say how it's changed their lives?
It's given them hope. They all say that. At the first performance, I had the most extraordinary experience of my life, which was at the end of the performance, I went backstage to congratulate the chorus and the conductor. It was done by Susquehanna Valley Chorale. They're out where Bucknell is in Lewisburg, Pennsylvania. And when I was backstage, this gentleman came running at me. He was huge. He was like the size of a Pittsburgh Pirates linebacker. Not a Pittsburgh Pirates, but a football linebacker. And I was at first taken aback at this giant running at me. He ran at me, and he got close to me. And my first reaction was to withdraw back because I said, well, have I done something wrong? You know? And he threw his arms around me, or rather threw his arms down to me because this guy was about a foot and a half taller than I was, crying uncontrollably. And he said, thank you. I never thought I could deal with my mother's disease until I heard this piece. And it was like changed my life that moment because I realized that what I did was beyond entertainment but could actually have an effect on other people's lives. And I liked that. I liked that you could do that. And it became kind of an aesthetic to try to achieve. Do things where people are moved in different ways, and not necessarily in heavy ways, sometimes just in humorous ways. I always try to throw humor in. In fact, this piece has a lot of humor in it.
When you say hope, do you think hope in that they can communicate with their loved one?
Right. That's it. That, because the last line of the piece is, love and music are the last things to go, sing anything.
Oh, wow.
And it came from a story of somebody going to a nursing home to see their father or mother and actually being approached by someone who came up to them and said, sing to me, sing to me, sing to me. And they said, well, what do you want me to sing? They said, sing anything. And it's turned out that all these studies they've done, we just actually participated in a study of School of Narrative Medicine at Columbia University, which is about how do you reach people who are unreachable with other forms of art and music, and also using stories from people as diagnostic tools, that very often what people tell you can be almost as effective as diagnostic tools, and doctors have to learn to listen to what people tell them because sometimes they're missing something. And so this is all things that have been discussed and come out into the open, that music is a profoundly strong way of reaching Alzheimer's patients, that they will respond to music when they will respond to nothing else.
Well, thank you so much for coming in, Bob.
Thank you. This has been a real pleasure.
Everything you hear on WRTI is made possible by members. Please join today.